morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. We're going to be with you for about 55 minutes today. A fascinating guest, a fellow Vietnam veteran. He was with the Marines, and I was with the Airborne 101st. But if we put our heads together, we probably went in some of the same areas of operation and up north. But Dennis, introduce yourself.
Well, good morning. My name's Dennis Pregent. Right now I reside near Raleigh, North Carolina, formerly from Adams and North Adams. I lived in both towns growing up. Joined the Marines out of high school, left in my senior year, spent 7 years with the Marines, 2 years overseas in Vietnam, got out, went to college, got my graduate degree from the UMass, and then started about a 35-year career in human resources, and came to writing late in life. It started probably 5 years ago, and at this point, this Berkshire Heroes in World War II is my fourth book.
Just to let everybody know, Dennis was a feature article in the local newspaper. I thought it was a brilliant article. I really did.
It was a great article. I appreciate it. I just was up in the Berkshires the first week of October, excuse me, and I had 5 engagements, book events, and ran out of books. It was so popular.
Well, I think right now there's a great interest in a lot of. I have a patch on the back of my Vietnam coat that said I was a Vietnam veteran before it was popular to be one. So. Well, for me to you, welcome home.
Thank you.
So, what got, and we'll talk about your book, but the other book I thought was fascinating too was Born in the Berkshires. I read a couple of excerpts of that. What brought you to do that book?
That book was, I don't know what triggered it, but it's got 30 interesting personalities in it, interesting people.
Yeah.
And I looked in across again. I write about the same 3 towns, Adams, North Adams, and Williamstown. And I found 30 fascinating people. You know, the first woman governor of Massachusetts lives in Williamstown.
Yes.
And the first woman attorney general came from North Adams. An 85-year-old barber who was still cutting hair. And many people will know the Jack's Hot Dog stand that's been in existence for over 100 years. So I interviewed personalities and the owners or just those people individually, and they had great stories. That's what resulted in Born in the Berkshires.
To me, there's so much to write about right here. I mean, you go down on North Street, right at the corner of North, where you go into Park Square, and there's a rock, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember where I parked the car, but I remember some things. It was a tavern there, and that's where they planned the raid on Fort Ticonderoga.
Wow.
So, and the first baseball game was played at the corner of North and Maplewood, and it was Amherst and somebody. So yeah, this area, and you captured it like in this one. I have to ask you about, because my wife referred to in this home as the Polish princess. My wife was a 1965 graduate of St. Joseph Central Catholic High School in Pittsfield. So your book, I and a good friend of mine, you're from Adams, Casey's Market, that used to be
yes.
I was Casey's adopted son.
Oh,
he had all girls. So I'm very familiar with the Adams in that era, because Joni Dario went at during that time.
Joni is in my high school class.
Yeah. So how did you get into writing?
Like I said, I retired and I really didn't know what to do with myself. And for a number of years, I moaned and groaned about, not being able to find my feet. And my wife said, "Why don't you write your stories down? You've always told the kids a lot of stories about Vietnam and about your past life. Write them down and we'll share them with them." And about the same time, our 50th class reunion occurred for St. Joe's. So I attended the reunion. My kids were reading my articles. Kids liked the articles. Our children, we have six children. And the reunion just got me thinking about and talking to a lot of Vietnam veterans, because 1965 was a watershed year. It was the beginning of the beginning of the what we call the war. And I found 10 or 11 just fascinating stories of fellow veterans from my same class, and even one protester. So I captured their stories, and that became the Boys of St. Joe 65 in the Vietnam War.
How
And
cool.
it was a tribute to them, to everyone who went and served.
Yeah, I was fascinated because I grabbed it from the library. And just to tease my wife, she, showing now she's not kidding. But we'll talk about that off air, the repercussions of that foolishness. But what are your, and I don't want to pry too deep, what are your memories of Vietnam? Because I think for me, and this is just my opinion, I better do this. The views and opinions expressed on this program are mine, those of my guests. They in no way, no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, Pittsfield School Committee, the City of Pittsfield, and Mayor Tyer, Pete White, and the City Council, and or the people who are riding their bicycles today at 36 degrees. I think you're brave. I'm interested in that. How do you, go ahead.
Things that come to mind are the smell, the oppressive heat, the people being scared to death in certain situations. Most of the time, you weren't scared, but for those days and minutes you were, it made up for everything else. One person in my squad was killed. And then I was a helicopter machine gunner for a number of weeks and was involved in evacuating wounded Vietnamese civilians, wounded Marines, and dead and critically injured. And those are my most poignant memories, especially the wounded and trying to, we had a medic on board each helicopter and go out to pick people up and try and stabilize them. And I just had never seen anything like it. And that's my most, that's the memories that come to mind.
Interesting you say this, because I'm the first thing that comes to is the smell. I'll pick up a smell even now, and I, there was that smell in the oppressive heat. I mean, awful, awful. I think this is a question with a statement. Vietnam has influenced almost everything in my life, sometimes overt, sometimes covert. How about you?
I would say it's had a great influence on who I am or who I've become. I don't think you can go through a couple of years of that maelstrom and not be have it affect you in some way. Physically, I'm affected. I don't like to talk about the stories very often.
I
It'll get
don't
me up.
either.
And I think my books sort of reflect my, what I went through. And I remember a lot of those days.
I don't know that again. This is me, do you two guys having a conversation? But for so many years, very few people even knew I was in Vietnam. I didn't. I never talked about it. And it was only since I got old. And I was talking to another Vietnam vet, and he said the same thing. For some reason now, the memories are coming back. They're more vivid. And there's so many of us are gone. You know, so many of us are. I had the absolute honor of going on an honor flight about 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago, and down to Washington in the wall, all the monuments. Tomb of the Unknown was amazing. But the Vietnam was an extremely emotional, bittersweet event for me. And I know some guys go and they do a rubbing or something. I just, it was tough for me. But you have brought things to light on paper that entertain and educate people. That's what I doing the review for this interview. That's what I excerpts of your books, and they really real life stories, I guess.
Real, you know, I'm trying to capture and preserve these stories that will be lost time, because as you say, we all are aging. Yeah. And I feel honored to be able to do so, to be able to talk to the Vietnam veterans, many who hadn't shared their stories.
Right.
And I've heard from some of their spouses, that's one of the first times they've heard the story, or see, they saw things in my book they did not know. I just felt honored to have been able to talk to them.
I worked with a guy for about 4 or 5 years, a fellow Vietnam veteran, and we were both cops. And he, for some reason, I don't know what it was, he said, "You were in Vietnam. You never said anything about it." And I said, "You're right. You're right. I didn't." But so that's the way it is. But your latest book, go ahead and give us the title again and blast it out there.
And the title is Berkshire Heroes in World War II with Courage and Honor.
And it's a magnificent piece. I hope they're back in stock, because I'm going to really push that. Folks, if you get an opportunity, especially if you've had grandparents or parents or what are in that war, I think you should buy it. That's, you know.
It's available on Amazon now.
Oh, good.
I'm just waiting to restock here because I've promised some people some copies. It really takes in the years 1941 to 1945,
yep.
You know, the center of the war. And it again works with the towns of Adams, North Adams, and Williamstown. And I captured 28 individual stories about men and women from those three towns. And stories were fascinating. The book will take the reader from Africa to Sicily, over the Himalayas. They'll be in the Battle of the Bulge. They'll be at Normandy. They'll be in Okinawa or Peleliu with the Marines. They'll read about PT boat radio operators. They'll read about paratroopers, artillerymen, combat nurses, fighter pilots. You know, as I started to pull the names together, I wondered if I would have enough names and if the stories would be exciting enough. Because my first probably exposure to World War II was 5 or 6, sitting at a picnic table out in back of my grandma's house, listening to my uncles and dad talk about the war.
Yeah.
And since then, I've been fascinated with it. And talking to these 28 people, to the descendants of these 28 people, was fascinating. They were helpful. They provided photos, documents, letters. The stories are just really gripping.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, my mother's heritage is Irish, and her oldest sister died from cancer very young. And my grandmother raised the three children that she had, two boys. They both were in the war. So when they came home, one of them brought a dog home with him called Humphrey. I'll never forget that. But sitting and listening to their talk to my grandmother and my aunts and my father and all, You got a whole different perspective than history class.
Yes.
You got the human piece. You know what you just said, and I agree. There were times I was scared senseless in what's the term? Hours of boredom interrupted by total minutes of anxiety or something like that.
Yeah, minutes of terror. Yeah.
Minutes of terror. Yeah. So, and then what did your classmates, we'll come back to your latest book. What did your classmates think of St. Joe's 65?
I've re most of the comments I've received were, I never knew what you guys went through,
That's right.
especially the ones who didn't go.
Yeah.
Our 11 vets and one protester. As I was writing the book, the editor said, "We ought to include a protester. What do you think?" And I said, "I don't even know of one that protested." So I sent a note to the class historian, and I said, "Did you know of anybody protesting at that time?" She says, "Yes, me."
Well, there you
So
go.
it was perfect because not only was she had a different version of those events back then, but she knew all of us. She knew the boy that was killed. She knew the one that was paralyzed. She knew the one that was crippled. And so I could weave her story in. It was a wonderful testimony to her.
Oh, that, yeah. I had a similar situation. I was selling poppies at the Guido's Market. And this really attractive lady, and I had my Vietnam hat on, and this attractive lady said, "Oh, I am so sorry." And I said, "For what?" She said, "When I was in college, I said awful things. I protested about you. And now I've matured and I've also got the facts." And then she gave me a hug, and I'm no Don Juan, so you know she was a pretty attractive lady. I said, "Here, take all these poppies. I'll pay for them." No, but yeah, I think a lot of our friends really didn't understand, and they believed the press.
Yeah, it was very telling for most of our classmates
Yeah,
based on their comments to me.
yeah, and then you come home, and we'll get back to your authoring. Then you were vice president for human resources for an international company. And how did you work your military? Did you ever fall back on anything they taught you in the military? In civilian
Well,
life?
when I got home, biggest thing on my mind, it reminded me of the World War II vets, is I wanted to get my education or get a
Yeah.
good job, get married and raise a family. And I went about it in that manner. And what was your question again?
How any what you learned in the military is in
Okay.
Vietnam or the military, how did that transfer into your civilian career?
The things I remember most of all are the accountability and responsibility. I mean, I was a 19-year-old corporal in charge of 12 men
Yeah.
in a combat zone. That's a lot of responsibility for a young man. People would hardly believe it today.
Oh, yeah.
And those experiences made me much more accountable and for the work I did. And I think shadowed me the rest of my life.
I concur 100%. Even now, you know, being an old guy, there are things that, like, the never give up attitude. You know, I know so many people that least little bump in the road, that's it. I've had it. That's it. And I think back on what we were taught: the improvise and overcome.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. If you can give me 10 push-ups, then I know you can give me 12. If you
That's
can
right.
give me 12, we can do 15. And it was always pushing yourself to do more. After I got out of the Marine Corps, I became a lifelong runner. And I can remember a number of runs and marathons I was on where you're tired, but you say, "Hey, look, you got 10 in, you can do
Yeah.
12."
Yeah.
And that stamina or that ability to go that extra mile, that extra inch. You know you can do it. It's there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know, this isn't gonna come up. I thank the military for my experience. I mean, I got out of high school like you. As I often tell people, I was in the part of the class that made the top half look good. So, yes. But going into the service, I really believe changed the course of my life. I really do.
Absolutely. I entered it when I was 17 and a half and spent the next 6.5 years there. And it couldn't have been more formative. I can't think of anything that would have been more formative.
No, in fact, my wife had a knee operation, so I've been kind of like Nurse Cratchit, taking care of it. So she said, how about you want to change the bed? I said, what do you think I got married for? I got tired of making a bed every morning that you could bounce a quarter on, you know. But the Berkshire Patriots, to get back to your authorship, how did you select these?
Now, you're talking about Berkshire Patriots, Stories of Sacrifice?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, so Berkshire Patriots, again, I selected the same three towns, and I really received names from the VA agents, historical societies, because that book covers 300 years of local history,
right,
going back from the French and Indian War to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And it takes people, you know, I found people in the Civil War, I found people in World War I, World War II, and they all have fascinating stories. I was so glad to be able to capture them.
Isn't that great? Yeah, no, I read the blurb on, I'll be honest. I did not read the book, but I read the review. And I really, again, think what you've captured is going to live far after we're gone. And I can see, and this is a compliment, I can see some of these books becoming textbooks or certainly references for textbooks.
People have suggested that I contact the local school system as having a supplemental reading and a history course.
I think you should.
Yeah, and I've got names. I'm going to look into that. The one with the Berkshire Patriots, the book, there was a couple of really touching moments there when I met with the families of two men who had been killed in Afghanistan. Because most of the people I wrote about had long been deceased.
Right.
And the book includes Ephraim Williams, who donated the money to found Williamstown and Williams College. I mean, he was killed in the French and Indian War. But the two young men that were killed in Afghanistan, I talked to their families. I went to the cemetery of one of them, and they're still grieving. They're still grieving, and it touches me. I still think of it now as we talk.
Yeah. I had the wonderful opportunity to grow up with a lot of World War II veterans. And one was Deputy Fire Chief Bill Reddy. He served on the Intrepid. And his story was, well, I just walked out of the conning tower when a kamikaze went into it. And so the movie was on. This is kind of a humorous thing. So he's laying on the floor of his living room because we all, with his kids, we grew up together. And he said, hey, Dad, that movie about your ship is on. He said, oh, forget it. I don't want to watch it. I was in the original cast. And sometimes I feel that way about Vietnam things. Wait a minute. I was in the real story. But when you write, and I was going to hold this till after the break, but I'll let you mull it about now. When you write, how do you write? And because when I interview an actor, I learned this a long time ago doing radio and television, that when you're interviewing someone like yourself, people are as interested in the backstory as they are in the story. So when you sit down to write, how do you do it? How do you prepare? I know I've written a couple of books. Mine are mostly about criminal justice. They're not anywhere as near as interesting as yours. But I have to have solitude. But before we get to that, I would definitely support you reaching out to the school system, and if I can help you in any way, I mean that.
Thank you.
I think, you know, they have all these professional days and all that. You could add a lot, in my opinion, to those because you bring history to life. Real history, you know, they can drive by a place in your book and see it.
Yes.
You know, it's not some fictitious thing, you know, what you've done and the efforts you've put into these, it's you should be applauded for it. You really should. I think you, the effort alone, like I said, I've written a few books, and the effort alone to just, excuse me, just get it down on paper is sometimes it flows, and other times you're like against the dam.
Yes. My process, Bill, is I get up at 4:30 every morning and I write from 5 to 7, 7:30. And then
Okay.
I shut it down for the day. When I'm writing about people, like most of my books are about,
Yeah.
I allow myself about 14 days to write a chapter. Chapters are about a person per chapter are about 3,500 to 4,500 words.
Okay.
I'm looking to amass about 100,000 words, which makes a good sized book.
Sure.
So if I do that 7 days a week. Within 11 or 12 months, I've pretty much got what I was looking for. Now, during the daytime, my wife and I spend time together, but I may be interviewing, I may
Yeah.
be researching. The other thing I do is when I'm in a certain mode, like writing about World War II, I'll often surround myself with little souvenirs, mementos of the war. You can't see my room now, all of it, but writing about the Civil War for Adams, North Adams, and Williamstown. And I've got a musket in back of me in the corner, and I've got a 3-pound cannonball sitting on my desk that says Vicksburg, Mississippi, 1863.
Wow.
So
Wow.
it keeps, and I'm reading books about that time period. My easy reading or enjoyable reading goes away. And I'm reading about the time period, and I'm trying to live in the time period. And that's what I did with all the other books too.
And I think that's familiar with me. A lot of mine was I wrote a book on managing violent youthful offenders. And I ran the pro. I worked on a team that developed the program. Then I was t drew the short straw and got tasked to implement it. Which, as you know, as a business person, the plans are always great till you try to implement them, and then,
Yes.
you know, but I see them as I write, you know, about an individual. I see them, and I remember the incident. And as I said, Dennis, before, I don't remember where I parked the car hardly anymore. So to remember, but my wife says you can remember something that happened 40 years ago. You can't remember last night. So there
Yes.
you go. We're going to take a break. Please stay tuned. There's a lot of what I call meat and potatoes with this interview. Dennis has had a wonderful career and family. But now he's capturing, in my opinion, the essence of so much of Berkshire County that, in my opinion, has never really been captured. And we had great authors here, but you know, no one sat down and wrote about the people that were here and what the people did. And so we'll be back. I really would ask you to hang in there. We'll be repeating because, Dennis, this is a morning show. I got people just coming on at 8 o'clock, people trying to get their kids on the bus. It's, you know, and so, but we'll tell you how to get a hold of all of his books because he's, and you're writing, and we'll hold that for after the break. You're writing another book. We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio. We are simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301. And I'm fascinated with this gentleman, and I've been looking forward to this interview. Please come back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM. The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at sundrini.com. And from Park Square Productions. Park Square Productions provides high-quality video and audio productions for businesses and nonprofit organizations throughout the Berkshires. Find more information about Park Square Productions and what they can do for you at parksquareproductions.com.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
We are Rotary, people of action. And we add our support to great ideas to make real change happen. Whether supporting the local warm coat drive, fighting hunger with our local food pantries, or making more transformational gifts like the splash pad at Clapp Park, Pittsfield Rotary is having fun and raising funds to change lives. Join us at our weekly lunches and get involved. Take action with us. Visit RotaryPittsfield.org for more information.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Do you have a favorite show on WTBR-FM? Did you miss the last episode? We've got good news for you. Most of our shows are now available on podcast. You can subscribe to your favorite and have the latest episode downloaded to your device automatically on Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or Overcast. Go to WTBRFM.com/podcasting and find out more today. WTBRFM, for the love of radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Tim's Lawn Care. Tim's Lawn Care can also take care of your landscaping, lawn care, mulching, and more. Tim's Lawn Care, 413-281-4222 4222 and online at timslawncarelandscaping.com.
Hello, Phil Tierney here, the host of Berkshire Jazz, where I play all the young tigers and old lions of jazz every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 on WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. Join me Saturday at 8. And if you know someone who likes and enjoys this great American classical music, tell them about us. Spread the word. Jazz is alive and well on WTBR 89.7. Thanks for listening.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we're back. I got Dennis Prejet with me today. He is a local, born and raised in northern Berkshire. Now he lives in Charlotte? Where? I'm sorry.
I live in Garner, North Carolina, right outside of Raleigh.
Right. Did you get affected by the storm in any way?
A lot of rain, but that's it.
Okay, thank God. Yeah. He lives in Raleigh, North Carolina, right outside of Raleigh. So we'll all be heading down there in about 3 months. To visit when it gets cold, and it's cold here today. We were talking, he's authored books. Three books right off the top of my head I want to just refresh and tell you about. And Dennis can tell you how you can get a hold of them. Born in the Berkshires, The Boys of St. Joe, and this was very, very well received even here in Pittsfield, in the Vietnam War. and Berkshire Patriots, and it's a longer title. But your current book, again, the title, please.
Berkshire Heroes in World War II with Courage and Honor.
And there was an article, you can pull it up, go and search the Eagle. It's worth reading the article in the Eagle because it's an amazing article. It was a wonderful article. How can they get your books, Dennis?
They're all available on Amazon. They could also go on my personal website and there's a link that'll get them to the books, but they're all available on Amazon.
Could you give us your personal website, please?
It's DennisPregent.com.
And real simple, DennisPregent.com, PregentT.com. And obviously the holiday season is coming. And if you don't think so, step outside. But I would add, I've already put in my request to the people who give me presents. And two of Dennis's books are on that list. Is Heroes, and I have to read this book, Berkshire Patriots. I just have to, because I love it. Your new book, now you're writing a new book on the Civil War and Berkshire people in the Civil War. How fast? Yeah.
I started about a month ago, and it's going to be called tentatively The Rise of the Civil War in the Berkshires. It'll cover a period from probably 1850 to 1865. And again, I'm going to focus on Adams, North Adams, and Williamstown, and people involved, engaged in the war. At the time, Massachusetts was a very strong abolitionist state.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of great stories. I've just barely started.
And you'll well be looking for that book in late 2025.
That would be about right.
Yeah. I'm sure you have too. Everybody says, I'm going to write a book. Until you write a book, believe me. Yeah, it is a process. And you seem to follow our fellow author, hardly known as well as we are, but Ernest Hemingway. He wrote Early in the Mornings.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other piece was, and some people may have alluded to, he might have had a few drinks on occasion. I read that when he was writing a book, he didn't have a drop. So there you go.
Well, some of that I attribute to my time in the military. We picked up a lot of things from the military. Yeah. Some of it is self-discipline and being accountable.
Sometimes my beautiful wife thinks I'm driven, but it's not that. If I have a mission, because if I have a responsibility, I look at it as a mission.
Yes.
And if my mission, like I got an editor now I might have to take up some of Hemingway's drinking issues, but I'm not going to. But you have to stay focused and. The fascinating, you are a fascinating interview. You put yourself in the spot, in the era. I don't know, people who are just joining us, Dennis, he was a Vietnam veteran, two tours with the Marines. And when he writes, he like right now he's writing the book on the Civil War. Tell him what you have in your office, if you don't mind. I don't want to. You don't have to.
As far as I surround myself with memorabilia or things from the era I'm writing on.
Yeah.
You'll see in back of me, there's a helmet. And in the corner, I have a musket from the Civil War. On my desk, I have a 3-pound cannonball that says Vicksburg, Mississippi. I sort of create a bubble, and I read about the era I'm writing about. That's all the reading I'll do.
Yeah,
which is a lot. Very often in my books, I'll read 2 to 3 books per individual. I'll usually read one about the division or regiment they were in or squadron.
Yeah.
I'll usually read memoirs or diaries from men that served with them so I can get a better understanding of their chronology. So I'm bathed in this bubble, and it lasts as long as I'm writing for this book.
It, because you have to. You know, or it'll be, when you pass, it'll be a book that never got published because you didn't finish it. But I find you have to focus on the book, and you do it a lot like I do it. I do most of my interviews in the morning. And before, I used to get up at 4 every morning. And that was when I got the most writing done.
Yes. Same here. I'm fresher. I'm more awake. Have a lot of enthusiasm early in the day. Now it sort of wanes as the day goes on. I may need to take a nap in the afternoon, getting up that early.
Yeah. I think you're right. It does. But I try to leave the non-serious stuff that I have to do until then, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
Because with my current situation, my current health, by 4:30 in the afternoon, I'm done. I'm done.
I'm most creative early in the morning.
Me too.
I can find the words I want to use. I'm most, you know, that's my best time for sure.
And when you start to write, do you, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Sorry. Whew. Do you do an outline first, or are you just at freelance?
When I begin to write a book, I do an outline. As a matter of fact, I'm working on the one on the Civil War right now. I'm working on chapter outlines. And I need a plan, or I just go willy-nilly, and that serves no purpose.
No.
So I've got the outline, but every book, I had an outline. It was easy because I was getting a lot of names from people to write about, from the VA reps or the historical societies.
Yeah, I found, and I guess I have to give credit where credit's due, and that is Sister Teresa Gabriel, who St. Charles Grammar School said, when you write a paper, do an outline first. So, sister, wherever you are, I'm sure it's heaven, but what's the most difficult part do you find writing? What's the most difficult part of writing?
The hard part for me is pulling your chapter together at the very end of it. I want to end on a high note. I want to end, the beginning and the end give me pause. I want the first paragraph, I want to enchant the reader. I want them to think that, oh boy, I want to read more about this person. And then the end, I want to tie it together with what he or she did. I want to tie it together positively. Now I start off each chapter writing about, I have an italicized first paragraph. For instance, this one, I'm going to read this first paragraph.
Please do, please.
This is in my current book, Berkshire Heroes, and it's about a man named Narciso Mosconi from Cheshire.
Wow.
He's the only person in the book who is still alive.
Wow.
He was on Iwo Jima, and I met with him. But I start off his section, his chapter, with the soft black coarse sand shifted every time he moved. It was hard to get his footing and even more difficult to dig a foxhole. He was a radar operator for an anti-aircraft gun, but with a high casualty rate, he had been impressed into duty as an infantryman. He had trained in the fine arts of signal intelligence, but now he knew only the incessant firing from a Nambu machine gun. It seemed to cover every inch of the beach and promised certain death if he lifted his head. To Chizo, it appeared that his shallow two-man foxhole would soon be his grave. So that's how I start off his chapter. That's, I work on those introductions.
But you if I may, just listening to that brought back some thoughts. But also, you capture the essence of the what he was going through. You know, there's a play. I don't know if you can purchase it or not. I don't. But it was at the Unicorn this summer down in Stockbridge. And it was Abe Lincoln in Illinois.
Huh.
And what it was, Dennis, was not the Abe Lincoln we've learned about in the history books. It was Abe Lincoln with his doubts and his wife. And it was, I was totally mesmerized by it because it captured a Lincoln we never knew. You know, we see the guy with the big top hat and all this, you know. But and what I just heard you write made me think of that. Because you bring out the essence of the trooper, of the Marine. People need to understand there is a price in, of war. We got to figure out better ways of getting along. And I think your book will help people do that. Of course, the state of the world today, you know, it's a flip of the coin. When you finish your, and I hate to put you on a spot like this, when you finish your Civil War book, call me, and I want to have you back. We're not done yet, but I if I don't tell you, I'll forget, and then I guess.
Okay.
You know what you're dealing with now, by now, you know. They don't keep the door of my office is in the basement, and pretty much the door is locked. I can only get up twice a day, so. Oh, I'm only kidding. The, how does your family embrace this? There's got to be some, got to be a little bit of give and take from the from your, especially your wife. If you're writing, you just can't stop, or I can't, because I'll lose the thought.
Carol's been so understanding. We've been married 59 years, and she was the one that started me on this path five years ago. And at times, I've worn on her patience. But she's been so supportive from beginning to end.
Yeah, and don't you think you need that? I mean, I do. I need to know that I'm not. And we've been married 53, going to be 54. And I can tell you, I think she's on volume 47 of the times that I've tested her patience. Yes. But she also is encouraging, and that to me. What you bring to the table in this in your books is, and I know I repeat myself, but when I tell people when you get to be 77, you're gonna repeat yourself too. You bring the humanity piece. You bring the humanity piece. I mean, just the thought of the boys of St. Joe 65. I mean, that was amazing.
Well, you know. I travel in time, back in time, to a different era.
Yeah.
When the boys were meeting on the corner after school to talk about the girls.
Yeah.
Or the girls were at the other corner talking about the boys. And we all shared the same nuns. And we all had the, it was Sister Big Ed had English class. And she was a severe discipliner, so we thought at the time.
Yeah.
So I sort of bathe myself, I get in this bubble, and I just love reflecting back on some of the good old days. And I try to show that in my book when I write about their lives.
And I try to do some research, where are they now? Some of the ones that I dealt with when they were in cars. And some of them have done very well for themselves that actually... like the military did for us, this incarceration did for some of them. They got an education while they were in there. They learned structure. They learned discipline, and they learned consequences. And a lot of them didn't know what consequences were. They were threatened a lot, but not a lot of people pulled the trigger. We found in the military, if they told you you're gonna if you screwed up, you'd be out doing push-ups, so your arms hurt. Well, we found out they weren't lying.
Right.
But after you finish the Civil War, what's your next book? What are you thinking about?
Oh, I'm not that far ahead.
Okay.
So it takes me about 12 months, 11 to 12 months to write a book. And then about 3 or 4 months to get it published. Now, my first book, The Boys of St. Joe, was with McFarland Press, a really accredited press.
Yeah.
When you get in their system, it takes 10 to 12 months to get the book published. And at my age, I don't want to wait 12 months to get what I've written down. I want to get it out there. Yeah. So I found a local independent publisher who turn it around in about 4 months.
Wow. Well, I my stuff is, I published one, Think Like a Terrorist to Defeat Terrorism in Prisons. And that's by Taylor Francis, which is a big international house. And you're right. And I'm not going to say anything, but I probably won't use them again simply because of the editing. They used a foreign editor and they didn't pick up on the nuances.
Okay.
And I'm sure you and I understand nuances. So
yes. And as I do this, I send a copy, a chapter. Once I complete a chapter, I run it through a software program called Grammarly.
Yes.
It picks up some of the real basic misses. I send it to the editor, and she's very accomplished, and she'll go through it. And then we've finally amassed the entire manuscript. We'll send it to the publisher, who's also got a critical eye, because I'm trying to avoid mistakes at all costs. I think in the last book, there was one or two mistakes out of 100,000 words.
Wow. And
if you didn't know it, you probably would never recognize the mistake. It wasn't an obvious one. But I just don't want to make mistakes. It seems to me if you start making mistakes, it just brings, it discredits the book.
I'd say there's no question about it. I'm like you. I co-authored this book with Dr. Francesca Spina. And we struggled to have everything right. Grammarly is another one. I use a personal editor that I've used for years. Probably 15 years since I got writing even articles. Her name is Alice Heiserman. She was the head of publications and editing for the American Correctional Association. Very well respected lady. She checked it, we checked it, then they sent it to their editor, and because they, that's life in the big city, you know, but
yeah.
I can't tell you how I've looked forward to this interview. I can't tell you how wonderful I feel for you and all the people that you've spotlighted, I guess is the word, the dead and the living, because they deserve that. Going back to the Civil War, to the Revolution. I mean, I love the war monument in Pittsfield. I don't know if you've been down there on South Street. You should it's an inspiring piece, totally refurbished. And the other one is this flag sergeant right at Park Square. It's a beautiful, from the Civil War. That was the dedicated, and there are probably some names there too. But when you think about what people sacrifice, whether it's war or not, our good friend here in Pittsfield, he's the head of the senior center. He finally got old enough to do that. Well, actually, he just stepped down. He's a veteran service agent. He was Jim Clark. You find him fascinating. Local kid, father was a fireman, brothers went to West Point and stayed in the military for a career. And, when you talk to guys like that, and with Veterans Day coming up, and that's another reason I wanted to have you on with Veterans Day coming up, is this. The military, it isn't a job. It is a way of life. And I hope... Dennis and I have shared that with you. I know Jim has when we've had Jim on. It is truly a way of life. It's everybody takes care of everybody. That's how you're, kind of brought together. And that's,
but so the situations you find yourself in, you rely on the people on your right and your left.
Yeah.
And they become as close as family.
Yes, they do. And they, and color or gender or whatever means nothing. No. Some of the bravest people I saw in Vietnam were Vietnam nurses.
Our drill instructor said the only thing he saw was green. He didn't see black or white or Asian. No. He said, "You're all green to me."
Well, our first sergeant, who was not known for his personality, I think in the mornings he'd have a bowl of raw nails with gasoline to clear his breath up. But he used to say, you know, we all bleed red. Remember that. And it just a Vietnam question, not an author question. Do you remember any real, I don't remember any real racism or any of that that was tried to be played up for a while back in Vietnam?
You know, I don't remember a lot in the Marine Corps. I know you could see cliques where different oh. people hung out with, you yeah. know, groups, but I didn't experience, yeah. I didn't experience that.
In Vietnam, I just thought, like you just said, everybody shoots in the same direction and make sure that direction is the enemy.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Dennis, you're a fascinating individual. If you were closer, I'd go up and have a coffee with you. But I'm waiting to February to drive down. No, I'm only kidding. But I will be reaching out to you when your next book is out.
Okay.
Or reach out to me and let me know when it's in print, and then
I will. I'll be glad to do that, Bill.
Yeah, and again, I thank you for coming on. I encourage you to buy Dennis. Just go on Facebook or what do they call it, the internet, whatever, and type in Dennis G. Preden, and you'll get all his books. And he is on Amazon, so there you go to do that. I like to support local bookstores. There happens to be one in Lenox. Go down there and ask them if they'd order it for you. But Dennis, the best to everything. Semper Fi. And be well. And thank you for coming on this show. And thank you for the effort that you put into these very historical and worthwhile books.
Bill, thank you.
And folks, Dennis, sometimes I have people in my audience that like to send me, they're not loves and kisses, let's put it that way. So, but I didn't do it at the break, but I will now. And this is my flag and Dennis's flag. We have friends that are buried under it. We have acquaintances that are buried under it. A lot of people at one point in their life signed on the dotted line that they would die for this flag. Now, all I'm going to ask you to do is don't desecrate it. Don't desecrate it. You can have your views. That's American. But please don't desecrate the symbols that represent America. And that flag all over the world means America. And a lot of people died for it. Thank you. And now the other part that really upsets people. God bless and have a wonderful day. And today, try to help somebody with their load. Make them smile. Give them a phone call. Just be good to somebody. We're all in this together. And each other, it's all that we have. Think about it.
Yeah.
Dennis, the best.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks
for a fascinating interview. I'm glad we got this the opportunity.
All right, Bill. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.